Before I start, I would like to say that I encourage communication. So if you come to marshallbrain.com and look at the bottom of the homepage, there's an email address and contact information. Whether you agree or disagree with what I say today, I would encourage you to write to me and talk to me about it, especially if you disagree, because it helps me to refine the ideas and stuff. So marshallbrain.com, there's an email address, just fire away. So we are gathered here today to talk about the implications of an increasingly automated economy. What are the possible economic effects of automation on our economy as all of this stuff that's been talked about today unfolds? And so what I'm going to do is, in about 12 or 15 minutes, summarize a book that I have online called Robotic Nation. It's not available in print. It's on the internet. Hundreds of thousands of people have read it for free. It's at marshallbrain.com. And I'm going to take that and just compress it for you today. So I hold three things to be, you know, we hold these truths to be undeniable or whatever. First, the automation of the workplace is going to continue. We all know that. So far, we haven't seen automation having a big effect on the service sector, but as machines get more and more intelligent, their encroachment into the service sector is going to become severe, and that as these robots, automation, whatever you want to call it, starts to gain more and more human-like intelligence, that the number of human jobs being created is going to decline. And obviously that's going to have an effect on the economy, but I want to think about it at a higher level as well. If you think about the universe, the whole universe right now, as far as we know, there is one intelligent species in the universe, and we are it. We have no credible evidence right now that there's more than one. And we are in the process of creating for ourselves this second intelligent species. And this second intelligent species is going to compete with us in the job market. And long before we get to the singularity, if it happens or how it happens or what happens, long before that happens, this second intelligent species will be increasing in intelligence and will compete with us in the labor marketplace. And it's going to have effects. And I hold that we should think about what those effects are going to be and plan against them rather than reacting to them. Our normal human mode of operation is to wait for shit to happen and then we react to it. Instead, we know what's going to happen. I mean, we've been talking about all these predictions and stuff. We know that certain things are going to happen. Instead of waiting, we should actually plan against them. And that's what we'll be talking about. So you guys know all this, so I'm going to come to this. And just a real quick, you know, when will the singularity happen? When will we have human-level intelligence? This is a straight-line extrapolation. 1982, we had, you know, 300,000 operations per second. 2002, we have a billion. 2022, we probably have a trillion. This, I'm talking desktop computers in your home. And 2042, we reach a level where a $500 box has some kind of human-level intelligence potential. It might happen 5 years earlier, 5 years later, but we know that this is going to happen. And that, the arrival of the $500 machine that can do that, whenever it does happen, gives us this ability to create autonomous robots. And this is a slide from Popular Science magazine. You're going to take that intelligent machine. There are two breakthroughs that are going to give it power that we know about: vision and natural language processing. So you're going to take and create those abilities as breakthroughs. They aren't here yet. We know that, but we know that they will occur at some point. And then we're going to drop those capabilities into bipedal robots that look like human beings. And so the scenario is, you walk into McDonald's and this attractive female walks up to you and looks at you and recognizes you and says, "Hi, Marshall Brain, you're back at McDonald's. How are you today?" And you interact with this thing, this person, and she knows everything about me. Every interaction I've ever had at McDonald's, she knows what I've ordered, she knows the name of my kids, She says, so did Irina have a soccer game this weekend? How'd that go? And she remembers that. And not only that, but if I walk into the McDonald's in Topeka, Kansas, it'll be the same person with the same knowledge, the same interaction. So the potential that this second intelligent species gives to improve our lives and to make things like a visit to McDonald's better is high. It's going to be a good thing when this stuff arrives. But we can also say that if this attractive female automaton can walk up to us at McDonald's, that's going to have an effect on the labor market. So we can easily imagine that at that level, the folks who work in the transportation sector are going to have a problem because robots are going to be doing the truck driving and the FedEx delivery and things like that. Education will completely change because I have two kids in kindergarten. They would much rather have Barney the purple dinosaur come bounding out to teach them than Mrs. Hardy or whoever is going to be teaching them tomorrow. Construction, if you think about construction or transportation or education or retail, nothing has really changed in the last 50 years. You know, you go back 50 years and look at how is a house constructed. It's a guy with a circular saw and a hammer. How is it constructed today? It's a guy with a circular saw and a nail gun. There isn't really that much increase, you know, in productivity that has occurred. But if you have robots with vision and language processing and a human-like form, they can go build houses. They can lay brick and put on shingles and all that kind of stuff. Construction is going to completely automate, and so is retail. So you can imagine the robotic Walmart. Walmart is the largest employer in the country today. It's like 1.5 million employees or something like that. The jobs in a typical super Walmart, there might be 500 employees there, the jobs aren't that complicated. There are things like cashiering, putting stuff on shelves, sweeping the floor, getting the carts out of the parking lot and bringing them back, offering help, which doesn't work so well in Walmart right now. It actually will get better when robots can do that. So as soon as you have a bipedal robot that looks nice and can see and understand language, there's like a million jobs at Walmart that are going to evaporate. But it's not just Walmart. It's Walmart and it's Target, which will have to do it to compete, and Circuit City and Best Buy and Lowe's and Home Depot and Winn-Dixie and Kroger's. And you just think about, this is a massive part of our labor pool. This is a huge part of our economy. I don't know in the back if you'll be able to read this, but this is 2000 census data. This is the jobs by category in our economy at the 2000 census. It shows that there are something like, you know, 114 million jobs. It generates something like $4 trillion in income. And you look at some of these categories in the context of intelligent, visual, language processing robots, and you think, well, will that have an effect on construction? Yeah, it's going to take out the construction industry. We're going to replace all those folks with robots. That's 6.5 million jobs. Manufacturing. Absolutely. We've already seen manufacturing get decimated with robots that just, you know, pick and place and stuff like that. There's 16 million jobs left that can be taken over by robots. Wholesale and retail. Yes. Any robot that can see and talk is going to be able to do the jobs at Walmart. That's 20 million jobs. Transportation and warehousing. That's truck drivers. That's forklift drivers. That's taxi drivers. That's the guy that drives the FedEx truck. All those folks. That's 3 million jobs. And, you know, like, we hope that they'll take out real estate agents as well and some other things. We'd like, you know, education's got another 2 million. We're talking about half the jobs in the economy right now we can easily imagine disappearing when you have a robot that can see and talk and just do some basic kind of stuff like detect where the shingle should go and nail it down. These are not... We're not talking about, you know, the complex jobs. These are the simple jobs that we can easily imagine. In other words, they're going to be doing at least half of everything, and as we progress a little bit further, they'll probably be doing everything in the economy. Transportation, education, construction, retail, manufacturing, probably a lot of medicine, lawyers, we pray, will get replaced by this stuff, and the price will go down and the quality should go up, we hope. Finance, that shouldn't be too hard to replace given recent history. So we have a lot of possibilities here. So that's my thesis, that before we get to the singularity and the utopia and all that stuff, that we're going to be creating robots that can start to displace folks from the workforce. And, you know, traditionally, what happens if you get displaced from the workforce now? So you lose your job. Like, let's say we were to automate the pilots out of their jobs. They're probably the first to go anyway. So pilots get automated out. What do we say? Well, you can always go get a job at Walmart. But you aren't going to be able to get a job at Walmart because Walmart's going to be shedding jobs as fast as it can with all these robots. So is there any evidence, though, that this is happening? So if you go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics website, they have a fantastic tool that lets you look at jobs in the United States economy. So what we're looking at here on this axis is number of jobs. So this means like 130 million jobs. And what we're looking at here is 1985 to 2005. And you can see that jobs, this is the rate of job growth. It's a nice, constant, solid progression until we get to the recession in the early 1990s. That's a normal kind of recession. And then we come up, and this is the recession that occurred in the early part of this decade. Okay, so let's zoom in a little bit. This is a normal recession in early 1990. You can see, if you can see the tick marks, it lasted about 2.5 years. That's normal. There have been 8 of these since World War II. That's about how long a recession lasts. Then we get the recession that occurred in early 2000 decade. We come up, it lasts 4 years instead of 2.5. But also, look at this line. The rate of job creation just changed. If we go back a couple slides, you can see it's been, it's been steady. It goes back. You can go all the way back to 1939. It's been steady for a long time at that rate of job creation. And then we come out of the last recession, which lasted a lot longer, and the rate of job growth just changed. Okay, so it lasts longer, it was deeper, the rate of job growth coming out of it changed, and now think back to what was happening at that period of time in our history. You had, if you'll recall, and you flew on airplanes around that time, the kiosk movement in airports was occurring, where we were getting rid of ticket agents and replacing them with kiosks. We had automated checkout lines appearing in grocery stores for the first time. That's when they all started coming into grocery stores. We had about 1 million call center jobs evaporate from the United States and all move toward India. We had the web, which decided to make the concept of a travel agent obsolete. There aren't really any travel agents anymore. They were replaced by automation. So this whole thing here, this huge trough, was referred to as the jobless recovery because the economy came back in terms of the stock market and stuff, but it took jobs a lot longer to come back. And then when they did come back, we changed this whole decades-long slope. It was a complete architectural change in the economy that occurred in that recession. So what has happened since 2005? Oh, look. Oh, no, it's another recession that we're coming. Now, show of hands, do you think this next recession might be wider and deeper than the typical recession that we've seen since World War II? Show of hands, might be. Yes, yes, it might be a severe recession that we might be entering right now. And look how soon. I mean, look at this. It was only like a couple years, and we're already, this is the beginning of the downturn, which will become another one of these troughs, which might be longer and deeper. Now, I want you to imagine the recession that's going to occur around the time that Walmart and Target and Circuit City and Best Buy and, you know, Home Depot, all those companies decide that they can lay off the retail sector, and 10 million folks get dumped along with their construction worker friends and their truck driver friends and probably their Joe the Plumber friends. They all get dumped into the unemployment rolls at about the same time. It's not going to be a happy day around that period of time for tens of millions of people. That is sort of the economic effect. So in the interest of time, these couple of slides just solidify what I said, but let me come to here and talk about pay. Okay. The other thing that's happening besides the jobless recovery and the loss of jobs and stuff is the way we get paid. I'm assuming most of us are normal folk in middle or upper middle America who get paid less than $250,000. You know, we're normal folks. Okay. We are seeing this really weird thing happen with pay. Right now, productivity because of automation is going up, but, see, and there's the siren because it's so severe, the pay is going up, or the productivity is going up at a really nice rate. It's going up at about 2.5% a year. Productivity is rising. Are we getting any of the benefits of that productivity increase? Traditionally, we would as normal folk, but not anymore. Compensation is only rising at a, you know, in some years it's actually going negative. We're actually losing ground, but it's not increasing at anywhere near the rate that the economy is increasing productivity. And, you know, it's all going up to the upper echelon. There's this concentration of wealth occurring. So what we see today is recessions getting more serious, lasting longer. The wealth is concentrating. Our pay is stagnating. The work week is lengthening. People are having to get two or three jobs to make ends meet. And meanwhile, we are creating the second intelligent species that's going to just exacerbate this trend. So we, in creating the second intelligent species, should be creating the most wonderful thing that has ever happened to human beings. Finally, we're going to be released from scrubbing toilets and flipping burgers and driving trucks and all these mundane jobs. And in theory, we should all be able to go on perpetual vacation. The robots do all the work, and we sit back and enjoy it. Instead, because of the way the economy is structured right now, when these folks, the second intelligent species arrives, it's going to have a devastating effect on all of us. You know, not just the people who actually do lose their jobs, but everybody who's around them, because there will be so many unemployed people dumping into the marketplace. So we actually, and the thing I would like to encourage us to do as thought leaders or whatever we are, is to think about how do we want to structure the economy, given that we know this is going to happen. There's no doubt that truck drivers will be out of jobs in pick a time frame. There's no doubt. Walmart workers, they're all going to be out of jobs. Construction workers, all of them. There's no doubt that's going to happen. So are we going to let it happen, or are we going to restructure the economy so that we can all go on perpetual vacation? I submit to you that we actually get to make that choice if we take it upon ourselves to do it, and we could actually redesign the economy to make that happen. And I think we should. We should redesign the way the economy works so that we all get the benefits of all this automation. So, how might you do that? You would spread the benefits of productivity increases to everyone. You would not let it all flow up to the CEO who's making $500 million a year or whatever ridiculous number they make. You would spread it out to everyone. You would break that concentration of wealth. You would increase pay for everybody. You would start reducing the work week. You would actually say, hey, this 40-hour work week, we've had it forever. Let's make it 35, then 30, then 20, until we're all on perpetual vacation. So I have a red light that's blinking. For more information, you can come to marshallbrain.com and read these articles. Thank you. Oh. I have time for one question, I'm told.
I'd like to know if you've heard of the academic field of research called history, because after all, we went through all of this same crap like 150 years ago, and it didn't produce the results you're predicting.
This is the sort of dissent I referred to at the beginning of this conversation. We did not have the ability to create the second intelligent species in the universe historically.
So we created the middle class, which was pretty much a second intelligent species, wasn't it?
The middle class was part of the first intelligent species. That's just a fact. We are creating the second intelligent species, which will compete with us in the job marketplace, and that's not ever occurred historically. So the other thing about the second intelligent species is that every year it will get better. And, you know, the first talk he talked about a neocortex and stuff, that might happen, but I think the folks from Walmart will get displaced by automation before I have a neocortex embedded inside my skull. That's just my guess. I could be wrong, and I would love for you to send me email so we can talk about it more. Thank you.
Thank you, Marshall.